Hi guys, another week down. This week I am ending the week, starting the update here, having just been out playing tennis, so I am thusly attired. For those of you listening, I am in my tennis hat because I've been out playing with the kids, which is nice. And you know, interestingly, this is sort of one of the upsides of being independent and having flexibility. It's nice to be able to go and sort of spend time with the kids before going to school and dropping them off and doing all of that. I will then get the flip side of that in a couple of weeks when I go away for a very long trip, which they will join me on for part of as well, which will be nice. But, you know, swings and roundabouts, it's nice to start off with a little bit of exercise though and feeling a bit fresher. Now, I need to feel a bit fresh because there is a heap of stuff that's happened in the last week. And much of it I've written about, some of it I want to sort of add here as well by the video. One of the things that I haven't written about that you will see soon, I will write about, is I finished the GDPR course that I've mentioned a few times. Now, I've only mentioned this here and there, but I've had a lot of people actually ask me questions about it. So there's bits I can tell you and bits I can't. I did create this for an organization, so I won't sort of name who it is and what it is, because I think that they will want to probably control the way that's communicated. It will be freely available to everyone. So it's nothing you've got to subscribe to or anything like that, which I'm happy about because I think GDPR is important. Now, GDPR, for those of you who are familiar with the acronym, will know that it is a regulation that is going to impact a very, very large, let's try that again, a very, very large number of organisations, particularly in the EU, but not just in the EU, because you can be outside the EU and be impacted by GDPR. And I've been quite interested in it for a while because one of the things that people keep asking me is they say, how are you going to deal with the fact that GDPR means that you can't have data in Have I Been Pwned because people haven't consented? Now, I always found that a bit of an interesting sort of position, and I honestly didn't have the facts at the time to give them a good answer. So when the opportunity came up to write this course and actually create something that's useful, and it is a commercial course, I got paid for taking all the time to write it and edit and all that, but also to learn something quite useful, that seemed like a good opportunity. And I want to sort of cover a couple of points here, and I'll talk more about it when it actually goes out, but a few things very briefly, because I know that for some people, GDPR is enormously important. The things that sort of stuck with me here, one of them is around the scope of GDPR. So for those of you that are not necessarily au fait with it, this regulation comes in May next year. It applies to all of the member states of the EU, as well as countries outside the EU wanting to do business in the EU. And parts of the GDPR regulation that people have picked up on are things like this extraterritoriality clause, which says if you're outside the EU and you're dealing with EU people's data, then you've got to abide by our rules. And this always struck me as a little bit odd because I'm sort of thinking, well, how are they going to make that happen? You know, like if you're, say, running some 2-bit website in Beijing, you know, can you imagine a European regulation coming along and going, you got to play by our rules because you've got our data in? They'll go, yeah, right. So what? Now, here's the interesting dissection, and this is sort of the only bit of GDPR I want to drill into here. The real key here is about whether you're offering goods and services to EU citizens or residents. And I've got a few examples here, which I'm not going to show yet because they're going to come out in the presentation, in the course. But there's a few criteria. There are things like, does the entity that is collecting this EU data subject data, or data subject just being a normal person like you and I, does the entity have an EU office? Because if you have an EU office, you're probably trying to do business in the EU. Does the entity offer languages in EU languages, or offer, you know, sort of written translations in EU languages? So if you've got pages that are stood up in Dutch or French or things like that, there's a very high likelihood you're targeting EU residents. Does the service represent currencies in euro currencies? So either in euro or in, say, Swedish krona, because Sweden is part of the EU. And another one here as well. So does the entity have EU domains? So if you have a .eu domain, or if you have, say, let's say a .nl domain, because you're trying to target people from the Netherlands, GDPR is going to look at these things and go, well, it looks like you're trying to do business in the EU. And if you want to do business in the EU, you've got to play by our rules. Conversely, if you simply have a website that stood out there on the web in a non-EU member state, and by virtue of the global nature of the internet, anyone can come from anywhere and put their data in there or use the service, that is highly unlikely to come under GDPR. And that makes a lot of sense. So I give an example in the course. I say, hey, if I want to stand up a website that's just about cats, and you can come and subscribe and leave your data, so your personal data, the data owned by the data subject, and you want to comment about cats, that doesn't put me under GDPR. I'm not going out there going, hey, Europeans, you know, here's everything in French about cats. I wouldn't even know where to start. And here you can pay me for watching cats in euros and things like that. Very, very different. So as it relates to Have I Been Pwned, it just simply sits out there as a global service that anyone from anywhere can come and use. It has data in there from people all over the place. I don't even know where most of the data comes from in terms of the countries of origin of the account holders. So based on all the evidence, it seems highly unlikely that GDPR is going to impact the vast majority of little websites that just sit out there on the web. Highly unlikely it's going to impact Have I Been Pwned. Now, governments around the world are preparing guidance about GDPR in terms of how does it impact their citizens. So the Aussie government's got some stuff here, and this is from our Office of the Australian Information Commissioner, and there's similar things for all sorts of other countries outside the EU as well. And they say, which overseas businesses are impacted by GDPR? An Australian business with an office in the EU, we covered that. An Australian business whose website enables EU customers to order goods or services in a European language other than English and enables payment in euros. And the third and final point here is an Australian business whose website mentioned customers or users in the EU. And again, when you sort of take a step back and you go, all right, let's stop losing our minds for a moment about GDPR, this makes sense. This is for organisations trying to do business in the EU. Now, there are many other nuances beyond just those ones as well, but I thought I'd just throw that out there now. I don't know if by next week this course will be live and public. Hopefully by the week after it will be, because I'd love to be able to reference it as I jet set around Europe for the end of May, all of June, and the start of July as well. All right, that's GDPR. Let's move on to actual things that I've written and things that are sort of more relevant to these weekly updates. And I'm just going to open this post here because this went live just after my weekly update last week. And I had alluded to this being in the works. And this is the combo list. So this is more than a billion records of email addresses and passwords in two combo lists. One of them was called anti-public. And anti-public, I'll check my figures now because this is becoming a blur already. There's been so much stuff that's happened. That was around, 458 million, something like that. 458 million email addresses and passwords. It was 458 million. And then there's another one, which is exploit.in, is the name that has been put on this list. And this one was bigger. This one was almost 600 million, 593 million email addresses and passwords, including mine, which was very unfortunate because this had come out of a forum that I'd been on probably a decade or more ago. Crappy password, reused across other crappy services. My data was in there too. I'm about as unhappy about it as everyone else is. But anyway, in total, I loaded, it was about 1,051,000,000 something accounts into Have I Been Pwned. I sent about 440,000 emails to people. Then this was over the period of several days because it is not a simple thing to load very large volumes of data. Sent out all these emails. As you would expect, I had a lot of people leave comments on the blog post, send me emails, DMs, all the usual things. And one of the things that kept coming up was people were saying, I would like the password out of this. So they're saying, okay, you found my email address, tell me what the password was. And I've always been very, very clear that I'm not going to give people personal records or personal attributes of data out of these breaches for many reasons. The most obvious is, there's over a billion records in there. I can't personally scale to be able to do even a fraction of that if people start coming and asking. And believe me, I got hundreds of requests, hundreds of them. So I can't do that just from a pure logistical, how do we stretch the human perspective. The other side of it is that doing it securely is non-trivial. So, you know, people go, why don't you automate it? Why don't you store all the passwords there? And this leads me through to another blog post I wrote, a subsequent one, about why I can't share passwords. And I felt the need to create one thing that I can always point people back to in order to tackle that. And I'll give you an example of some of the reasons, and these, to my mind at least, make a lot of sense. But, you know, these are things like, first of all, some people saying, can you just email me the password? I was like, no. You know, I'm one of the guys that berates the other companies who are emailing passwords, so I'm not going to do it myself. The exception was I did email a very small handful of Have I Been Pwned subscribers as part of the verification process, asking them if they're okay with that, and then suggesting that they really want to change that anywhere they have used it. Not just because I was emailing it, but because it is kind of out there. So there was that. The other thing is the storage. And, you know, when you think about how do we store passwords today, how should we store passwords today? They should be strong cryptographic hashes. They should be bcrypt with high work factors that are going to take a long time to crack. The problem is that that's not going to be of any use to the people who then want to get the password out of the system and see what it is, because it's a strong hash. So you've got to store it in a way which means it can be retrieved in plain text, which means at best it's going to be encrypted. And then I'm one guy sitting here with everything running in the cheapest possible fashion I can while still being reliable and secure and scalable and all that sort of thing, with an encryption key being the only thing that saves someone else getting their hands on a huge amount of data. I mean, okay, they've got to actually get data out of the database too. But you see the point. This is storage in a way that we berate, we being the security people, berate other organizations for doing. It's an insecure means of storage. So that was a problem. The other problem is that as much as this could have been good for this anti-public and exploit IN data, which had plain text passwords, it's pretty useless for all the other data breaches, which are almost exclusively using some form of hashing for email for passwords. So, for example, LinkedIn, SHA-1 hashes. All right, SHA-1 hashes are bad for passwords. However, it's there as a SHA-1 hash. Now, unless I go through and I start cracking hashes, I can't give people anything of use. And people would retort and they'd go, well, you could give me the SHA-1 hash and then I could figure out what it is. And it's like, I see where you're going with that, but first of all, we're back to insecure storage because SHA-1 hashes are not very good. Second of all, there is this tiny fraction of 1% of people that use Have I Been Pwned that would know what to do with a SHA-1 hash. Most people would have no idea. So, yeah, you think about your non-technical significant others and your friends, and if you were to say to them, hey, you got owned the other day, here's your SHA-1 hash, they'd be like, well, now I'm even more confused than I was before. So that was a problem. People were coming up with ideas where they said, look, you should have a service where someone enters their password into your site and then you hash it and compare it to the one in the database. And I'm going, whoa, hang on a second. Nobody should be creating a service where you ask the masses to come to the service and then take their passwords from other totally unrelated sites and put it into your service to check it. Unless you're a password management service, like LastPass or 1Password or something like that, nobody should be doing that. And then people go, okay, well, what you could do, here's a good idea, so that you never have to deal with the password, you don't actually post it to the server, you do it all client-side with JavaScript. And I'm saying, but you're still asking someone to put their password into a web browser. And that person doesn't understand the nuances of client-side processing versus server-side processing, nor should they actually need to, nor should anybody have to go through and check it, because we should never be asking anybody to do that. Someone even suggested, well, they could just type it into the console of the browser in the DevTools. And I appreciate the ideas, I do, but that is so non-practical for 99.something% again, of the audience, it just doesn't make sense. So that was some of the reasons. A few other things here as well. Some people said, well, it doesn't matter too much because the data's already leaked. And this is, I think, just a very disrespectful way of treating people's data, where we sort of say, well, your data got exposed in some place that is accessible by people who shouldn't have it. Let's now not give a shit about how we handle it. Like, that's not a very, very good attitude to take at all. And it's also the sort of thing that would bring down the wrath of law enforcement, pissed off companies, upset owners of that data, that would make it difficult for me to run the service. So there's no way we're going to do that. And sort of leading into that, and this is the final point here, simply being able to say, honestly, hand on heart, that I do not store any of these passwords in that Have I Been Pwned service up in the cloud is enormously important. And it wouldn't be the same if I said, I do store them, but I'm really, really, really careful and I hash this and I encrypt that and I do all these other things. That is not the same as saying, I simply do not have them. End of discussion. Easy. So I get the desire for people to have access to this, but it is very much, when I delved into it with a few people, it's very much a curiosity, I think, more than anything else. Because the reality of it is that once you have good password management practice, you have a good password manager, you do unique passwords, you do strong passwords, the impact of something having turned up in some unknown incident years ago is minuscule, very, very, very small. But the sentiment that I keep hearing from people, and it's not just this incident, it's been many other incidents in the past, particularly Ashley Madison, I kept hearing this. What people want to know is they want to know what other people know about them. And I actually find that really interesting. I think there's another sort of train of thought I could possibly pursue in the future on that. But that's what it is, people wanting to know what other people know about them. And that is a sort of a parallel issue to, I want to protect my account so that other people don't log into them. So that was the situation the other day with this these breaches. And that has now pushed Have I Been Pwned to 3.75 something billion records in the system, which is amazing, given that it started with 155 million. Interestingly, I remember it was June last year that I hit a billion. And I remember it because I made it live during my talk at NDC Oslo. We loaded a piece of data, flicked the switch, and everyone went, yeah, well, it's not much of a celebration because we don't want to think about a billion people getting owned. But it was a significant point where we hit this billion. And now it's more than 3.5 times that, which is pretty insane. So I don't know where it'll go from here. I've got lots of ideas. We'll just have to see what comes to fruition and you'll hear about it here. Now, one other thing that happened this week, and this is kind of what I love about this industry, right? You just never know what's going to come up. And I had an interesting experience. So I went to the dentist, hadn't been to the dentist for a while, so I went to a new one. And I've gone into the dentist, and this is a true story. I did not make this up. Doing the forms and everything, because you got to do forms when it's the first time you go to a new one. And there's a guy behind the desk, and he's sort of in a polo shirt with a logo, and it's an IT something something, and there's a receptionist. And they're talking, and he's saying, he's actually on the phone to someone, he's saying, yeah, they got cryptovirus. I'm like, oh, wow, this is interesting. You know, like I can observe firsthand, like a cryptovirus in the wild, like how do normals respond when this happens? And they're all looking pretty stressed because if you get ransomware, and I assume that this is what they're referring to, it's not going to be a good time. So anyway, I'm listening to them talk, and then I'm in the dentist chair, and the dentist is sort of doing her thing, and she's kind of talking to the dental assistant going, just make sure you don't open emails from anyone you don't know. And they're writing notes, and they've got paper and stuff all over the place because they're basically offline. They can't touch any of these machines. There's a Windows 7 machine sitting there, so already we're starting to talk about a slightly older operating system version there. That's sitting there, but they're not allowed to touch it because stuff's got ransomware and they're rebuilding everything. And then as I go back out the front to sort of pay and get on my way, the guy's asking the receptionist, and he's looking at her going, so where are your backups? And like the look on her face was just, it's just that blank stare, you know, like, our what? And then the dentist comes out and the dentist goes, well, we got some boxes in a cupboard here, you know, like computer boxes in a cupboard. And the guy's looked at it and he's gone, they're not turned on. And the dentist said something along the lines of having seen a flashing light somewhere in 2015. And there was a part there where I was sort of going, for a while, should I offer some thoughts or some advice or some, you know, console them or something like that. But I could see it going to the point where it's like, you guys, are basically this poor bloke there in the IT shirt doing the IT guy thing is now just going to have a shit time of it for the next however many days while they try and rebuild the machines, recover as much data as they can, which sounds like it's not much. And he was going to have to be the one that continually explained to the dental clinic how they just simply lost some files. So I'm kind of curious as to how it works out. I don't particularly want to go back to a dentist anytime soon, but I'd really like to know what actually happened to those guys. So that was kind of a curious one. That is in my Security Sense blog post. So I'll link through to that as well. And the other thing I'll put in there, I did a free course on ransomware for Varonis a little while ago. And that goes through some of these incidents and the types of attacks and how you can mitigate it. But obviously things like actually having versioned backups you can roll back to. And you test these too, right? Like, don't just do backups. Test that you can restore them. Keeping operating systems up to date. Windows 10 is a significantly safer environment than Windows 7. So they are well and truly out of date there. I don't know what their patch cycles was like, you know, but inevitably somewhere something broke down, as well as all the social engineering aspects of ransomware too. So I'll link to that. That's a free one. That's kind of useful. So last thing, I've got NetSparker up there again sponsoring me today. So I'm really glad to have those guys back. They've been very supportive of the whole sponsorship model for quite some time. I still use their tooling every time I demo dynamic analysis as well. In fact, if anyone wants to have a play with NetSparker and point it at a site, go to hackyourselffirst.troyhunt.com, which has got basically all these vulnerabilities in it designed to be terrible. Point NetSparker at that and see how much stuff it finds that even you as sophisticated humans who know about security don't find straight off the bat or take a lot of time to find. It's kind of interesting. There's a few little things in there that you'll probably be very surprised about. So big thanks to those guys. I will still be here next week, and then the week after I will be at the AusCert conference here on the Gold Coast, and I'll still be here in the country, and then I'm off on travels. So I'm going to enjoy my time at home and try not to stress too much about the ridiculous amount of stuff I've got to prepare before I go. Thanks very much for watching. See you next week.